We good? We are live. Okay, we're going to get started. Let me first begin by just a quick introduction, and then we'll sort of talk about what the session is about, and hopefully you're in the right room, and then we'll dig right in. So I'm Daniel Kogan. I'm a group program manager in the SharePoint team in Redmond. And part of the responsibility in my group is the new SharePoint developer platform, or what we refer to as the SharePoint framework. So how many people here are at all familiar with the SharePoint framework? About half the room? Great. So we're going to have a little bit of a recap about SharePoint framework for those who are new to it, and then we're going to jump into all the things that are new for everybody with regards to the SharePoint framework. Before we do that, I'll let Vesa introduce himself.
Thank you. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in Dan's team, so no pressure for me. I'm essentially responsible of the SharePoint documentation, dev documentation, community work, and a few other things within the team as well.
Great. So with that, let's just jump right in. So part of the SharePoint framework is really being part of the old 365 sort of developer ecosystem and the whole developer platform that we are delivering for people who are working on old 365, in our case, specifically around SharePoint. The way that we think of this is really, we have a couple of different canvases. Canvas is really just a fancy word for, here's a place where people go and do some work. The nature of the work is going to be different depending on each workload. The workload that we care about in this particular talk is that pages, right? SharePoint pages. And a lot of this has to do with how our SharePoint pages interact amongst themselves, interact with the user and the user data, and therefore we have the Microsoft Graph as a data layer that we can interact with. And so you're going to see repeatedly over the Build conference and going forward how we talk about these canvases and how they interact with data and users and amongst themselves. So the rest of the session is really about pages, how we build pages, the things you can do to extend them, the frameworks that we deliver, the tooling that we deliver for you to work within the canvas. Okay? So with that, when you think about these canvases, there's a few things that probably everybody thinks about doing. We have this common way of thinking about functionality across the canvases. There's this notion of extensions. Not every canvas has the same level of extensions, but the types of things that you can imagine doing in extensions are things like actions and task panes and dialog boxes and events. And I'm sure that you can imagine that if I'm building an action or a task pane for a document canvas, it might be slightly different in technology than the way it would be for a page, but conceptually, they're sort of similar, right? In that you want to give the end user an experience. We want them to look and feel as close as possible so that it's not jarring when the user goes back and forth from one to the other. So that's really the trajectory or the path that we're trying to get the O365 developer platform on. So with that, let's talk more specifically about SharePoint, SharePoint extensibility, and how we got to what we're doing. So a few of you said that you've already played with it. The important thing for us, there were several sort of driving factors and principles when we started building the SharePoint framework about a year and a bit ago. In case you're not aware, SharePoint framework is generally available. We shipped general availability in February, end of February, middle of February. So if you haven't used it because you were waiting for it, you can stop waiting. It's there. It's available. So I would encourage you to go use it. So why did we do what we did? There are a few driving factors. A very important part of the SharePoint framework is that we build things the way that we ask you to build things now. That may sound really simple and obvious, but that hasn't always been true if you're familiar with our history, right? We used to build stuff internally in Redmond one way, and then we would give you a way to do your stuff, And then you would come back and tell us that it didn't work, and we would say, oh, yeah, we don't use that ourselves. We're not aware of that issue. Well, that's not true anymore. We're going to feel the pain that you feel, and therefore we feel we're going to be highly motivated to go fix it. And I think it's a pretty good experience now where our development team is building in similar fashions. It's not identical. I'll confess that it's not identical. And it's because when I build something, I need it to deploy to 100% of all tenants as quickly as possible. When you build something, it's going to go to one tenant or to a handful of tenants who your customers are and so on. But it's pretty much the same tech. So that's an important guiding principle for us. We build things the way we ask you to build things. The other thing that's really important was we wanted to make sure that we were giving you the tools that let you build things sort of industry-leading technology. So for a very long time, people would joke, half joking, half sniping, that you needed a PhD in SharePoint to be able to get stuff done. That shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't have to have a PhD in SharePoint. Yes, you will need to understand SharePoint. Somebody in your org will. But the tools that we're asking people to use are the same tools that modern web developers are using for all sorts of things, not just SharePoint. And so that's an important thing for us, making sure that you can go and build using the tools that you're familiar with or that you're interested in learning about because they will lend themselves for other technologies. And then lastly, but very important, you saw in the previous slide, is this notion that we're building on top of not just SharePoint, but the new Microsoft Graph, right? Microsoft Graph providing data and insights into what's happening with your data. And so those are sort of the high-level principles of what we've been doing. What I wanted to do, and I'll keep this brief because I think a good number of you raised your hand that you've already seen or played with the framework. I was going to just do a quick little demo in case you haven't seen sort of the new publishing experience. And the reason I show this is built on top of the framework. So this is us using our framework to build our first party experiences that we deliver to you. And so if you are familiar with SharePoint, your SharePoint pages probably don't look like this. We say edit, and when I go into edit mode, I now have my web parts right here. I'm going to be able to go in and pick a new web part. These are all the web parts that we've pre-installed in the service, but you're going to be able to build your own web parts and deploy them. We use the word web parts. It's different technology than the web parts you're familiar with, but the idea is they are the same business logic. This is a way that an end user is going to grab some business functionality and apply it to the page. So we build our experiences using our framework. We build our web parts using our framework. And we ask you guys to go do the same thing. A lot of this was driven because in the service, people just weren't able to get things done the way they wanted to, right? On-prem, you had full control over everything you did. It was great. In the service, not so much. And so we needed to go and find ways to, A, keep up with what people were doing, and B, unlock or unblock things that people wanted to do. What I mean by that is a lot of what we've done is not revolutionary in the framework. What we've done is really taken SharePoint to where our developer community was anyway. They were doing a lot of stuff using modern development tools and JavaScript and da-da-da, and it was just fragile because we weren't really prepared to manage a lot of that. So what we've said is, what are people doing? What are the tools they're using? What are the frameworks they're using? How do we bring SharePoint to them so that they can actually repurpose those technologies and those experiences in SharePoint? So with that, we're not going to do a long demo because it's not worth it. I just want to jump right back. And there we go. I talked a little bit about tools, so I wanted to just sort of bring that back. When we talk about modern technology, there's a few things that people sort of always react and say, this is new. Yes, it's new. It will be new. I think it's well worth it for you to go and invest, if you haven't yet, in learning some of these technologies. they shouldn't be that scary. They shouldn't be that different. But yes, there's a learning curve. Absolutely, there's some new stuff here. When we talk about the tools themselves, and we put up wrong machine. They all look the same. Look, three surfaces all look the same. When we put up all these logos, the reaction I always get is, wow, like, I don't know any of this stuff. What's it for? How do I use it? This is what the cool kids are using, but I'm not familiar with it. And what we found is that for most people, once we help map it to things that they understand in the enterprise today, yes, it's a new version of something you're familiar with. It is not that radical. Yes, you'll need to do some learning. I get that. But we have things like the Yeoman templates, which we're going to show in a few minutes, that are the scaffolding that you're going to go and build your projects with. We have Gulp. We have Node.js. They all have some similarity to tools that you're familiar with. And so I would encourage you that even if you're not going to go and invest in building your next web part using the new frameworks, if you need to take something away from this and go back to your IT department and say, hey, where do we invest? I would invest in some education over the next little while and get your people ready to use some of these tools, because this is really where we're going, and we're going pretty fast. Okay? So I'm going to talk at a very high level how the tool chain works, and then I'll pass it over to Vesa. So the first thing that you do if you're going to go build a new SharePoint framework web part, or in this case, we're also going to do SharePoint framework extensions, is you install the SharePoint generator using Yeoman. Your Yeoman template, as it were, gets instantiated, and we're going to show you how we do that in a few minutes. You then go and build whatever your custom solution is using Visual Studio Code or whatever editor you choose to use. Once you've done that, you get to play with a really cool new feature that we call the Workbench. And so you're going to be able to build your web part or your extension and then go test it. Well, extensions, we'll have a conversation about that in a second, but certainly your web parts. You're going to build your web part, and you're going to be able to go and test it locally on your dev machine. So if you're familiar with SharePoint development today, this has always been a bit of a pain, right? You needed to be tethered. You needed to have access to the server. You needed to upload something. We've realized that a lot of the development effort needs to be local and then deployed. And so this gives you that ability. You're going to be able to go build your client-side web part, test it out locally using this Workbench, which is really almost like a SharePoint emulator is the way you want to think about it, right? It's like a local emulator of SharePoint. You can have some mock data in there. You can play with it. And you can do a bunch of round trips until you get your web part the way you want it and then deploy it. And so then you go using Gulp, deploy, and get your web part up into the service. And there's really two parts at this point. You get a package that you deploy as an app to the app catalog. And really all that you're doing there is loading a manifest that points to a bunch of JS files that are sitting in a CDN, assuming you've configured a CDN or in a library if that's where you put them. And so you have these two pieces that you get out of this process. One is the thing that you put into SharePoint. The other is the code that you're going to be executing. And then what's really cool is if you need to go make some updates to your web part or whatever your custom logic is, all you need to do is rev the JavaScript files on the CDN. You don't have to worry about uploading to SharePoint again because that thing just keeps pointing to the latest and greatest versions. So very quickly, that's sort of the tool chain, as it were, of how we go through building a new client-side web part for SharePoint in the new framework. So with that, first big announcement.
First big announcement. So I don't know how many of you actually saw the blog post which went live yesterday. Today is Thursday.
Today in Finland, yesterday in...
Which was around the individual new functionalities and things which are coming up in the SharePoint framework. We do have quite a few of those covered within this presentation as well. But let's start with the first announcement. And the first kind of a new thing as part of coming to the dev preview is the web part communications and connections. And this is a classic requirement or request from our field and customers that we need to have this capability of having two waypoints on a page communicating between each other. In old communication, in old SharePoint, or using the classic web parts, this was a relatively common scenario. People want to have a list of items. When you click a list of items, you want to have a detail shown on the page as well. With SharePoint Framework, with GA version, that wasn't really natively there, implemented by us. Technically, you could have actually done implement that stuff as well. But now we actually have a native support for web part connections or communications. And what it actually means is that you can then easily have two web parts, for example, side by side on a page, and then essentially communicate between the web parts. And this is a typical subscribe and event model based on the event identifier. Right now, when we go to the dev preview, this is only available using code. But we're absolutely looking into having that connectivity UI there in the future for end users as well. So that you can have a multiple different kind of web parts, and then you can connect them between each other, and the end user can kind of build their page experience within a SharePoint Online. And basically, it works in a typical way. So web parts can raise and subscribe events, and those are kind of being routed through the SharePoint framework. So in practice, we have two web parts on a page. One of the web parts is essentially saying, I'm subscribing to the events. The other web parts is then essentially closing those events, and the SharePoint framework is making sure that those web parts who are subscribed to the events are getting actually those messages in. So you can actually build easily this kind of a more complex UI experiences using the client-side web part.
Yeah, this was a really big ask, right? So when we brought out the framework last year and started showing people how you would go and build a web part, the obvious thing that everybody said is, great, how do I get web part A to talk to web part B? And we said, we understand, we're working on it. And so this is a very important part of us sort of delivering on that vision of making sure that your web parts can interact.
And it's a good example of innovation, which we will keep on doing on the client-side web parts as well. So new functionalities coming up in the future. We're building on the adding new capabilities all the time. Just quickly showing some code. We're not going to spend too much time on this one because we will have a demo, live demo on this one as well. But how it works is that essentially we have a web part which is then raising an event using the methods and services from a SharePoint framework. The method or the event has a unique identifier. In this case, it's training master item selected. And then that's being kind of thrown to the SharePoint framework. And the SharePoint framework is then looking which are those other web parts which have been subscribing to that particular ID. Relatively simple implementation, but it does solve the communication part through SharePoint framework. And then whenever we get the UI layers there as well, then the end user can create those connections as well. So pretty simple, but super powerful anyway from that perspective. Good. Let's quickly have a look on this one in practice. So let me flip on my machine, or Dan can actually flip on my machine.
Seven.
Yes. So this is a relatively simple SharePoint Online website, and I'm going to just create a new page here where I'm going to then put those web parts in. So let's add a page on this site and start from there. So that's a modern page, and in the modern page, because I have already installed my client-side web parts, I'm also seeing some custom web parts available among the out-of-the-box web parts from the web part picker. And from here, I can start by having the training list web part. What the training list web part is basically doing, it is surfacing different training items from a list within a SharePoint. And you can actually, for example, filter down on those words, and it's fluent, and it's searching and filtering down the UI as we move along. Now, this one doesn't actually give details on the training itself. So what we can do is add an additional web part below that and scroll down. There's our training details web part. And now when I'm actually selecting a web part or an item from another web part, they're communicating between each other. And essentially, there's a classic list details functionality. Pretty easily doable, pretty easily implemented. What's also cool about, obviously, you can extend this to the level of, in this case, we're selecting the one item from a list, and then this details class web part is then crawling additional data or getting additional data to a different lists, and for example, showing how many people have already enrolled to that particular training. pretty simple stuff in SharePoint Framework. And this is one of those things which we will create a tutorial for you pretty soon, which will be available in our documentation. So you can actually get the starting point. You will able to download all of these examples down as well. But pretty simple, pretty powerful, and maybe some of you, I think it's some of you might be thinking, hey, wait a minute, I want to have them side by side. And maybe we cannot actually show you that today, but we're working on that one. It's a slightly different team, and not our team who's actually working on the page model, multi-columns and all of that, but that's in the development as well. So it doesn't have to be one, well, it's not just the one column within a page. Good. Let's flip on back on the slides and move into the slightly more, even more exciting announcements. So we've started with something not that super exciting. Well, it's super exciting, that's fair.
You guys are super excited, right? Part-to-part communication? Super? Oh, yes. Come on. Okay. So,
that was lame.
We're going to work on super excited. Yes. We will build up. The next one will be that much more exciting. Okay, here we go.
So the second announcement is around the SharePoint Framework extensions. And this is really around the fact that we are no longer just with SharePoint Framework limited on the client-side web parts. You can actually do, let's say, classic SharePoint UI customizations by embedding a custom JavaScript on a page using the SharePoint Framework. We'll give you the tooling, we'll give you the capabilities of actually making this happen within the modern pages and within the modern UIs and the modern lists as well. And that's a massive deal, obviously. Woohoo!
That SharePoint people should be. That's a tough crowd. If that one's not super exciting, I'm not sure what is.
Well, probably we need to show what it actually
means. Okay, let's go.
So what it actually means is that in the classic SharePoint framework scenarios, you were building web parts. And quite often people are then saying, yeah, but I need to embed a header. I need to do some other modifications. What about custom rendering of a field? There's a JS link property in the old implementation. What about those things? And it was obviously all the time in our roadmap. It was actually in our public roadmap as well that we've been working on this one. But let's walk this through those three different customizers, which we start with, and we will do more in the future. The number one customizer, the first customizer is the application customizer. And essentially what it gives you is an opportunity to embed JavaScript on a site collection, site, or in a list level. If you want, you can also embed your custom implementation directly in the UI. So we will give you a specific guaranteed endpoints in the UI where you can actually embed your functionalities, like the header section, and we're looking into extending that to the footer and a few other sections in the UI as well. What it means is, I think I think Dan put it actually really well when we were chatting about this session. It's kind of a UI interface. It's a contract. We guarantee that those elements will be there. It's guaranteed that those elements will be on a page, regardless in the future if we modify the page.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really important here is sort of how we got to this. So there's a few things. We delivered the modern experiences for lists and libraries and heard very loud and clear, but you took away all our capacity to customize it. That's not cool, Microsoft. We heard that. Then we said, okay, here's the problem. If we let you continue doing random stuff like you've all done, we're gonna keep randomly breaking you like we always do, and that's just not a good experience. And so we stepped back a little bit and tried to figure out how do we go about both allowing you to do the things that you need to do, and yet finding a way that we can take responsibility for the service level agreement and saying, hey, we won't break you. And so what we've done is we have this notion of these extensions. This is one, the application customizer. There's others we're going to go through in a little bit. And over time, we imagine there'll be more. But these are really just strongly typed things that we say, hey, as long as you play nicely in the way that we ask you to, then we will make sure that we don't break you. Because the problem was in the past, although super flexible, it was super fragile. And those of you that used it, you probably know what we're talking about. So that's really how we got here. This was A, loud and well-received feedback. We heard it. B, we needed to make sure that we weren't just going to open up again and say, okay, we're back to being flexible and fragile. We wanted to be somewhat more robust. And so we took our time, and we're feeling pretty good about this model. This is early days. It's not even out in developer preview yet. It will be soon. And you know, we're going to go through just a few examples of these. Over time, you'll get more.
Thank you. So, and if you're a kind of a classic SharePoint developer, the application customizer kind of links into the user custom action, but in a guaranteed way and in a centralized, controlled way. So to be able to get that application customizer on the site and to be able to use that, you will install a SharePoint framework solution to that catalog, and so you have that the approval of your customizations. Now, the second thing what is actually shown on the page in here as well is then the command set customizers. And this essentially gives you an opportunity to execute JavaScript when somebody is clicking a button in the context menu or in the toolbar menu. So you're able to, for example, pop up a pop-up window, so you don't have to just redirect the user to somewhere else. It has some additional intelligence, so you're able to figure out how many items are being selected. If you have two items selected, your button will be visible or the selection will be visible. So classic requirement as well, which is now available through the command set customizer. And then one thing on the UI, this is not intentional getting blurred. So this is an example of a field customizer. Field customizer gives you the opportunity to override the rendering style of the field. So you can actually decide how the field value is being rendered based on your business scenario. In this case, this is showing a scenario which we're going to see in a demo in a second, but essentially we are blurring that item unless the mouse is actually on top of the individual field. It could be much more complex than that. It could be a map which you're drawing, it could be buttons, it could be whatever is your business requirement to make it happen. If you're, again, an old-school SharePoint, not an old-school, but if you're a experienced SharePoint developer, old-school experience, experienced SharePoint developer, this relates on the JS Link capability, so client-side rendering, and you will get a full flexibility on taking an ownership of rendering that particular field, which for experienced SharePoint developers, kind of attaching on the terminology. Now, like mentioned, we have three different customizers to start with, the application customizer, the command set customizer, and then the field customizer to pinpoint. And that's what we're saying is that that's only a start. We're looking into having additional customizers for you to take advantage in the future as well. So you're able to essentially, in a safe way, customize SharePoint Online and having those UI endpoint and extensibility points available. Good. So let's actually have a quick demo on this one. And I'll show how to get started with the extensions, and then I'll show a slightly more advanced scenario. Not a super advanced scenario, but you'll get the idea of what you can actually do with this. But let me actually go to the command line first, and I'm going to quickly create here build 2017 folder, getting there. I'm not going to actually do the scaffolding because that might actually take quite a long time. But if I now do a yo Microsoft SharePoint, we can actually, I'm running a newer build of the Yeoman templates, so we can actually see additional selections, additional capabilities available. So let me slightly zoom down. My solution name is build 2017. In my case, I quite often use React. And then it is asking which type of a client-side component you actually want to create. So this is already a new thing. In the old version of the Yeoman templates, or GA version of the Yeoman templates.
Old. We just old. Shipped in February. It's not old.
2 months old.
Two months old. 2 months ago, yes. We didn't have the bottom option.
We're moving so fast. Come on. Anyway, at that time, we only had a client-side web part option available. But now we're asking what kind of a type and client-side component you want to create. If I choose an extension, it will ask, is it a field customizer, list view customizer, or application customizer? And from here, I can then select, for example, the application customizer, and it's asking the typical things like the solution name, description, and all of that. And after that, it's scaffolding the actual project. In my case, I'm not going to actually do that because it takes some time to do the scaffolding. I've already done that beforehand for the sake of saving some time. Let's actually jump on the what we're getting. So when you create an empty SharePoint framework solution with an extension or starting with an extension, you still get the exact same SharePoint framework solution structure. So the solution structure is exactly the same as client-side web parts. The key difference is that what do we actually have inside of the sources folder? So all of the configurations, the basic gulp actions, and all of those are still the same. But then it's all about what are we scaffold for you as a starting point. As an example, the application customizer in this case, this is just out of the box, right from the Yeoman templates application customizer. It's a relatively simple starting point. And from here, you can start extending that to anywhere you want. Now, in this particular scenario, we are just throwing an alert on the page. And obviously, this wouldn't be that good of a dear idea if you're attaching this to the site collection level, because every single page would be starting with an alert. But it shows how we can embed JavaScript on the site collection or site or in a list level. And then it's up to the fact that what do you actually want to do for your application. Now, we do provide nice base classes here, which are providing additional services. So you easily get access on things. So if I do this.context, that's familiar for the client-side web part developers as well. So you have all of that underlying framework available, and you can easily access that within your code. This is a relatively simplistic sample, like mentioned, but you basically have full control of, first of all, embedding JavaScript on a site, which is doing something. It could be, let's say, Google Analytics. It's a classic requirement, or people are asking, or some other analytics which they want to embed on site. You can easily use an application customizer to get the JavaScript there, even though it's not visible for the UI. Or then your application customizer could actually request an access to that header section or other future sections, and then modify that with a, let's say, navigation elements or whatever is your business scenario. Good. Let's actually do a slightly more complex, not a super complex scenario, but or not a super complex thing. But this is a list. Let me slightly zoom that so we can actually see what it is. So this is a Contoso Adventures list, and this is essentially people who have signed up or information of a people stored within a SharePoint list. And these fields do not have a field customizer in them. That information is kind of considered as normal. It's fine to know that Caroline is from Seattle and Washington State. But now, in the scenario of what if we would have some confidential information and you want to avoid that somebody is actually sneaking behind of your shoulder and looking at that information, we can now control, we can easily control the rendering of those fields, and we can also warn the end user on what's going to happen. So let's modify the field. The view. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to go to the edit current view, and then I'm adding here three new fields, which are already in the list, but I'm getting them visible within the UI. So I'm adding here emergency contact, emergency phone number, and the phone number of the particular contact. So clicking OK, and now because those fields has a field customizer inside of them, the behavior actually changes. Not as significantly, but we actually had an application customizer which realized that, hey, you actually have a confidential data and now visible within this view. So therefore, we probably want to show you an instruction which is that, hey, click here, by the way, you need to look on the company guidelines around the confidential information. And also, that confidential information is hidden until I actually need the number, or until I actually need the information around that. So I'm moving my mouse on top of it. Relatively simple scenario, but shows the flexibility of the platform as well. So we're using field customizer and the application customizer on top to get a header experience.
Yeah, I think what's really important, so we sort of played with the scenario a little bit, and I'll be honest, sometimes people get confused and go, wow, it's a security thing in SharePoint. Don't get distracted by what we're doing, right? The important thing isn't that we have this obscure blurring feature. That's a little bit of a showmanship thing while we're on stage. The important thing is you can now go and make that field render any way you want. You can then have the application customizer notify the user because we said, hey, here's some metadata, here's some business logic, here's some rules that you need to understand. And so we have these slots, these well strongly typed areas that you can go in and do things with in a way that, frankly, you know, last week was just impossible in the service. So that's the important takeaway there.
Yes, indeed. And in this particular case, this implementation, just quickly running through that one as well. So we do have a base field customizer class here. which is then providing a similar set of basic services for you. In this particular case, on the field customizer, you get a method which is called onRenderCell, and then basically it's up to you what's going to happen. You can output the value, you can even output buttons or functionalities or controls. You get a full control on that individual fields, which is showing the value for the end users. When we go to the dev preview, we'll start by only with the read-only, essentially the presentation layer. In our roadmap, obviously, we're looking into doing exactly the same when somebody's editing the field. So you're able to create your own custom editor control if you want to do that. But that's not first in the dev preview. We keep on iterating on that. Now, in this particular case, as an example, it is a React component. So we're creating that React component. Quickly just looking into how this actually works. We have a privacy shield field privacy shield component as part of the field customizer. And in here, essentially, we're doing nothing more than, I'm going to quickly zoom in. Well, actually, let me do that. Nothing more than if the field should be visible, then let's actually do a different style rather than the blurred cell style when we shouldn't be showing the information. So when the mouse is over, we will show actually the information, and when the mouse is not over, we're going to blur that. And the blurring is nothing more than actually styling in the blurred cell styling of the CSS, all being packaged on the SharePoint framework solution and then getting deployed on the tenants and getting associated also on the field itself. Good. Heading back on the slides.
Oh, you weren't going to show the application customizer?
Oh, well, let's have a look on the application customizer now that my manager is requesting me to show that as well. Cool. So application customizer, almost the same thing. This is slightly more complex than the one which I showed out of the box one. So let's actually slightly zoom that out. It is obviously extending from a base application customizer base class, which is giving you the base structures. In this particular case, it is figuring out that if we have any of those fields, which are confidential fields, it's going to actually render the section or the header section in a slightly different way. Let's have a look on the behavior in a second one more time. But the actual, because it's a React component or React implementation, the actual implementation of the UI is in a React component. And in here, we're essentially deciding, do we need to have a privacy header or if we don't need to have a privacy header? If we need to show the privacy component header, there's a field in a list which is containing confidential information. We show that. If we don't, we show a normal UI there. Relatively simple scenario, but I think it provides flexibility. So one more time in here, because we have the fields in the view, we're showing that information above here. So it's a good kind of a good example of just not concentrating individual customizer, rather making the application customizer to be aware of the field level customizer. And maybe a quick kind of a clarification on also how these are, well, they are being created using the Yeoman templates. We'll give you the templates for dev preview pretty soon. Come back on the timing in a second. Well, it's coming soon. But how do you actually associate these to the fields and within the site? So technically, we're using kind of the SharePoint existing object model. We have additional properties in a field object, which is a client-side component ID, and then we have a client-side component properties. And then in the user custom action objects, we have a client-side component ID and a client-side component properties. The properties is there, so you can actually do a one implementation, which is going to change its behavior based on the instance where it's used. So you're able to kind of parameterize that property or the field customizer behavior. Because it's used in this list, it might be using slightly different behavior in another list based on those parameters. But we'll come back with the tutorials and all of the guidance and videos which will walk through the technology immediately when we go to dev preview as well. Good. One more announcement, one more thing to say before we go to the roadmap and other sections. So, extensions, super cool. Web part communication, super cool. One of the things what we've been having quite a lot of feedback is that, well, I would like to call a Graph API. I would like to get information from Craft, but in a SharePoint framework client-side web part, it's slightly complicated because the identities are slightly different. So now we are heading to the right direction. So we do have an OpenID Connect support for third-party solutions. And essentially what the OpenID Connect means is that you can request an access token from your SharePoint framework client-side web part or extension just as well. And then you're able to call a Craft endpoint to get information without the additional ADLJS or MSAL complexity. So the behavior would be more seamless. You can more easily get access on that information. Now, we'll start with a subset of scopes and subset of functionalities, but we are looking into extending that in the future as well. So there will be, it won't be the whole Craft open for you, whatever you actually want. We'll give you the initial set of scopes. I think it's, I don't know if it's super public, but I think we can actually say that initially...
The minute you have to ask me that on stage is probably a bad...
That's probably a bad idea. That's fair. That's fair. So we're looking into going, at least looking into going live with the group read and group write permissions. So you're able to access group information, essentially the group behind of the site, and also write the information behind of it, like the calendar of the group and all of that. But then extending those scopes gradually to be available more and more for the developers as well. Good. And this really relates on the where we started. So,
right. So the idea is we're trying to bring this right back to where we were at the beginning, right? From the O365 platform, the way you want to think about this is you have all these canvases on top of which we have extensions. We showed you a little bit about the SharePoint extensions. Below the canvases, we have this common Microsoft Graph, which we've now talked a little bit about how you're going to be able to access that. And really, depending on the workload, there's going to be some differences, obviously. But you want to start thinking about it as a common ecosystem where O365 has a canvas that the user interacts with and we present data. We have extensions where we can go and do customization work, and we have the graph where we go and, you know, get insights and data across workloads and so on. And so we wanted to sort of bring all that together once again, just so that you really crystallize on that. With that, people come to these because they want to know what's coming. So this builds all by itself, so we'll let it build. Okay. So we have the SharePoint framework. It has a couple of different pillars. We have the notion of web parts, which we've talked about and is now in GA and people are building. And if you haven't built a new client-side modern web part, I encourage you to go do so. If you want to go see some cool ones, we have the SharePoint showcase for web parts where we have a bunch of partners that have built some cool web parts. The point being, that's out, it's available, and yet we continue doing work on it. So we've now announced today the web part connections. There's more work to be done around framework isolation. We'll be looking at this thing that we're calling maintenance mode, which is how do I interact and debug these web parts. And if you've played with our workbench, there's a lot of opportunity for us to go and take the workbench to really become a developer tool. Today, it's really more like a test harness. And so we're thinking about where does that go in the future. This is all high-level thinking. These are not commitments. We're not shipping any of this in the next few weeks. This is just to give you an idea of where we're going. Extensions. Similarly, we showed you the three extensions that we already understand. And what I mean by understand is we've thought through, we spec'd, we have code working, we are prototyping with, we will soon be in developer preview, and there'll be more of them. I keep saying there's more because we don't imagine that any one of these pillars gets done, right? These things, over time, will keep evolving. We'll keep delivering new extensions. As we move towards the right here, things get a little bit murky and gray. You like the UI there. We're looking at what we're going to do with add-ins. So for a long time, people were saying, oh, are you killing add-ins? Is this a replacement for add-ins? And we kept saying no. We imagine the new SharePoint framework, the client-side web parts, the extensions live side by side with add-ins. There's an appropriate use case. There's an appropriate time and place when you want an add-in, and that's totally fine. And we're going to keep supporting those. So we've done some work. We GA'd the add-ins in Toolbox?
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know if you realized, if you're using Modern Pages, if you have add-ins installed, those add-ins will now appear in the Toolbox for our modern authoring experience. So that's just an example of, hey, we're doing work to bring the add-ins forward. We're making the add-ins part of this new ecosystem. They're not getting left behind. Admittedly, there's way more announcements in the new framework because that's where we're putting the bulk of our engineering because it's new. But we're doing quite a bit of work to bring the add-ins up to speed and making sure that they play nicely in this world. And then there's tons more, which is blank right now because it's just lots and lots and lots. If you've been following the journey of the SharePoint framework for the last year-ish, we've done tons of stuff. I'm not going to promise that we're going to keep at that speed for the next year, but we're going to try. Like, you should expect lots of new things going forward from here through the summer, through Ignite, through next year. We're going to keep developing. The framework is just at the beginning. We know there's a lot more to go. And we're well-funded and have lots of support, so we're pretty confident that we're going to keep delivering. So with that, just a very quick recap.
So all of the, just recapping today's big announcements before we go to the additional, the next steps, so to say. So we announced today the SharePoint framework extension. I would say that's the biggest thing. There was a blog post yesterday out around 11 PT, which was already kind of covering what they are. Today we kind of covered more detailed what is actually available and how it actually works and how do we associate them to be available. The web part connections, a great thing as well, quite commonly asked scenario. So that's available for dev preview pretty soon as well. And open ID connect support for third-party solutions. Maybe that's the wording of that statement could have been also Microsoft Graph access from SharePoint framework because that's the first step. But we don't actually want to limit ourselves only to Microsoft Graph because the OpenID Connect cross Office 365 opens other opportunities as well. Obviously, the Graph being the number one API endpoint in the future for all of our services in Office 365.
Okay, so with that, we keep teasing you with, we have this new framework, we have this new framework, we have these new extensions. The obvious answer is when, and I'm here on stage to tell you I don't have a date. no, it's not quite that bad. So we're saying coming soon because quite honestly, it's developer preview. It's not going to be anything for production, so I don't want anybody to start focusing their development team to go and build something. We're not there yet, right? So it's going to be over the next few weeks, probably, give or take. So it's not going to be summer. That's way too late. It's not going to be next week. That's not quite ready yet. It's over the next few weeks. We will get a developer preview out there. What does that mean? That means you need to have a developer tenant. Okay? If you have a developer tenant, we're going to light it up, and you're going to be able to go and start playing, building extensions. If you want more information, we'll have stuff on the PMP site around.
Yep, and in the dev.office.com.
In dev.office.com. So we'll start publicly sort of guiding people to the right places so that they get the right information so that they know how to get access to it. But it's going to be preview. So it is not something you should go and start building business logic and deploying to your production tenancy. We reserve the right to break you, and we most certainly will exercise that right.
And maybe like mentioned on the, just making sure that we kind of learn our mistakes in the past as well. We want to make sure that now whenever we have the dev preview from day one, you will have the updated documentation, the tutorials, the videos. So you don't have to kind of wonder, oh, okay, cool, dev preview, what next? So how does it actually work? We'll have samples for you to get started as well, because those helps on adapting the new functionality as well.
So I think we've talked quite a bit about where we're going, what we're doing. I don't want to dwell on these. What I do want to do is we have about 10 minutes, so we'll open up the mic to questions if there are any. I assume there's going to be questions since this is hopefully new to pretty much everybody, or did we answer everything? Really? Not a single question? Step right up. In the meantime, I will put this up there, which I think is pretty helpful for resources if you're looking for things. Okay, yes, sir, question.
Are the field extensions list view specific, or will they also work in search results or contact query results?
So when we're rendering field values and the field customizer, is it actually included or applied when the results are being rendered in the search results or in the content by query results?
I don't believe they're going to be respected in a search result in the sense that it is applied to a view, and so that view is specific to the list and library rendering. If the result of that list item happens to come up in a search result, it doesn't have that view on top of it.
But coming back on that one, it's a great point that maybe we should consider the fact, and actually it is in the roadmap as well, to be able to actually, when you're rendering your own custom whipboard, if you're rendering a field value, what if you would execute that using the field customizer?
Sure.
Because that would essentially solve your scenario as well. Absolutely understood, requirement. Any other questions?
No questions? We left 8 minutes for you. We usually go overtime, and this time we were deliberate. Yes, sir.
For your framework, does that work on-premise? I saw you have a demo.
Yes. Good question. The framework will be shipping on-prem. It'll be shipping as part of Feature Pack 2. The exact date is still to be determined for Feature Pack 2, but the framework will allow you to build modern client-side web parts and run them on your classic pages on-prem. The point of that is the next time you go and build a web part, you should build it in the framework, because that way it'll be transferable from on-prem to the cloud when you're ready to go, as opposed to building a version on-prem and a version in the cloud.
So for your framework, for your deployment, so the framework, is that to be on the client side or is it on the server side?
Sorry, your question?
Your framework, you're going to deploy this framework for your existing on-premise farms, right? Will that be deployed on the client developer machine or on the server, your components?
So our components, when they're getting to the on-premises, are they being deployed on client side or in the server side? And it's basically both. So we will do server side modifications in SharePoint 2016 to support the SharePoint framework. So there's a lot of stuff happening underneath within the server side as well. Now, when you're developing a SharePoint framework, then it's a client side. We'll give you the Yeoman templates, which will work within the on-premises as
well. But there is an update to your server, if that's your question. Yes.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Yeah. So that's why it's part of the feature pack for the on-prem server. So you will need to do an update of your server, your on-prem servers. You'll have the framework now on there. And your development model is sort of twofold, right? There's bits on the server, and then there's the client-side bits that execute.
Okay, thanks.
Yes? Good.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Hi. In the example and the relationship between the field customizer and the application customizer, so the application customizer was trying to detect if the field was there.
Yes.
This is the logic. So the application customizer runs on every page, but then it shows only when...
So yeah, in this particular scenario, and obviously it's just a business scenario which we wanted to demonstrate the functionality, but the application customizer was actually attached on the list level, because you can actually do an application customizer in a site collection level, so it would be rendered in every single page or in a site level, only all pages in a site level or in a list as well. And then the application customizer was checking, hey, do I have any of these security fields being present on the view of this particular list? And the answer was, oh, yes, then it's going to reflect that learning.
Yeah. So the application customizer you want to think is the place where you're going to put business logic that needs to render for the entire tenant, for a site, for a library, whatever it happens to be, as opposed to the field, which, well, that's obviously the field that's more specific, right? And so you'll have one which is a global, and you can define global at sort of whatever scope you need, but one is sort of a global business logic. And in this particular case, it interacted with our fields, but that was just sort of stagecrafted. There's no reason why that had to be.
Okay, thanks. And still on the application customizer, one quick. So how do I point to a known element in HTML, and am I restricted in reality to point to non-HTML or
yes.
in theory?
So we actually, unfortunately, I didn't show that one in a demo, but essentially from a SharePoint framework, you can request a known element in the UI. So essentially, SharePoint framework will give you the div itself. Essentially, you're saying, hey, give me the div or the header div. And then it's up to you, what do you render in that div by yourself. So we guarantee that those known elements are in the page.
But if I'm bad and I use jQuery or something, I do document get element by div there, in theory, I'm still able to overwrite.
So in the JavaScript implementation of your application customizer, you can modify that div any way you want using any framework, so that's fine. But there is a underlying service where you are requesting that UI endpoint, which is UI endpoint kind of, the div which you will get. Can you run a script outside of the SharePoint framework and get access on that particular div? The answer is pretty much no, because in the modern UIs, in the modern experiences of SharePoint, we have the NoScript tag, NoScript enabled. And that means that there's really no alternative ways of having the JavaScript executed or existing even on their sites unless you would use a SharePoint framework. And that will then give guarantees for the end users and also for IT and customers and also for you that the things are working more reliably.
Thank you.
Well, welcome. Few okay. more minutes. We need to close up.
Well,
okay.
We'll take one or two more questions
yes.
if there are, but we're not going to force you to ask us questions.
And quickly, before the question, because the slide went on, just going to explain this one as well. So one of the things what we obviously want to do is continue building the community around the SharePoint. The SharePoint customization community, our SharePoint BNP, is providing code samples, reusable components. The BNP is essentially our channel to provide all of the documentation what we have cross SharePoint development nowadays. So we do own the SharePoint development all up, and we want to keep on evolving that. So please contribute back as well, but keep on up to date on what we're doing. Yes,
yes sir.
Question.
I just wanted to, are you guys still going to continue to support more frameworks and including them inside of us, like, you know, like Bootstrap, Foundation, those other type of things?
So we're working through the what frameworks we support. I mean, our generic answer is we're framework agnostic. That said, I think there's a reality that we use React, and so the world is more efficient if you have fewer frameworks. And so if you're on the framework that we're on, you're only loading the one we're loading. Some frameworks are more or less practical, right? We can have a long debate about Angular and Angular 2, and, well, Angular 2 doesn't really lend itself for what we're doing. So there are frameworks which may or may not be necessarily interesting or on our priority list, but at the root of it, we don't really care what framework you use, and whether we deliver a Yeoman template for that framework will really be a function of how much demand we're hearing from people and what are they using. The intention was we're not locking ourselves in. So we recognize that next year and the year after that, the cool framework that we are not aware of will show up, and we'll be able to switch. We will switch slowly, because we have a large development team and a lot of our first-party stuff is already sort of in React, but we will be able to accommodate whatever the right framework is that the industry and our customers are asking for. So kind of a roundabout answer, but it'll really depend. Time will tell.
And slightly elaborate on that one. So it is slightly, let's say, misleading even when you run the Yeoman template, it is requesting which framework do you want to use. No framework, React or Knockout. Actually, it's just what you get as a starting point. So you can just as well choose Node framework and then still use React. It's not that we are essentially
blocking.
It doesn't lock you
yeah.
in. It is slightly misleading when you have a look on the solution which is getting out there and created. Then it's like, okay, I can use Angular, I can use Mustas, I can use React.js, Riot.js, or whatever.
Okay.
Thank
great.
You.
Okay, with that, thank you very much. Please fill out your feedback. And we'll stick around for a little bit if people have more Q&A. If not, two more things. We have a booth down in the expo hall. Come by, ask questions. We'll be there. And then next week, there is the SharePoint Virtual Summit. If you haven't signed up and you're interested in SharePoint, you should go and get online, get yourself signed up, because you're going to see all of the announcements that we've sort of hinted at a little bit. Not the ones that we declared here, but we've sort of nodded and hinted at a few things you will maybe get to do. You'll get to see them live getting announced next week. So I highly encourage you to get online and check out the virtual summit. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.